And now, the podcast that makes a gross noise when you step on it, Unsquish the Fish, with your host, Ron Canup.
Hello, Dolphins fans, and welcome to Unsquish the Fish. This is a football fan podcast devoted exclusively to the fans of the Miami Dolphins. On today's show, episode 2, we're going to be doing our offensive side of the ball breakdown. I've got my boy Keith back in with us for another episode. And we're going to tell a little story about the time me and Keith accidentally met, Tony Sperano. What's up, Keith, man? Welcome again.
What's going on, Ron? How you doing, bud?
I'm just as good as I was 10 minutes ago when we stopped recording the first show. Even better now. little break there. little drink break.
Yes.
Man, you know what we got to do? We got to do like a show on game day where we just, well, you're not really a big drinker, where I sit there and just pound beers and we talk about the game that's coming up in a few hours. I don't know if anybody would be able to have time to listen to it. Maybe Saturday night we record a little 15, nice. 20 minute. I get liquored up and then we just say, all right, yeah, we're going to beat the Patriots 50 to nothing. Game changer. Anyway, we're gonna wear that joke out. I think it's already time to let it go. It's been like 8-9 months for us, and after an hour and 5 minutes for the listeners, you guys are probably like, okay, that's enough of that. All right, man, let's start it off by how you want to tell it. You want to tell the story, or you want me to tell the story about the time? How many years ago was it? It was his first season, right?
Yeah, it was his very first season.
So it was
there.
Many years ago that I think it was 2000. It would have been 2008, actually, the 2008 season.
Yes, it would have.
That we accidentally met Tony Sperano. I'm going to let you take it, man. I'm going to let you take it away.
Actually, it was August 14th of 2008.
And why do you remember that so specifically?
Because that was the first ticket that I ever got in my life on the way back home from that practice.
Oh, man, that killed our groove too. We were jamming to some white boy tunes and singing along with it and dancing really horribly in the car, and that's what you get for having a black Mustang with like the darkest limo tint you could find. That was honestly kind of your fault.
How horrible was that? But
is that still the only ticket? Is that still the only ticket you've ever gotten, or have you had tickets since?
Nope, that's it. The only one. Well, man, whatever.
All right, man, hit it. Why don't you tell everybody about the time we met Tony?
Well, we decided to go down to a practice. That was actually back when we had first realized that they actually had open practices, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was my first. I know it was my first practice. I didn't know if it was yours, but it was my first practice.
Yeah, it was my first practice. I had never been before because I didn't know anything about it. And we had no idea where we were going. I mean, we're down in Davie. You know, we have no idea where we're going. I believe we'd gotten off at the wrong exit in the beginning. And when we finally found the college, because obviously they have their practices on the college campus there.
Yeah, Nova University, I think.
Yeah. We're driving back and forth, you know, lost. We have no idea where we're going or what we're looking for. We keep seeing these signs, but, you know, we're like, okay, where do we park? Were we allowed to park over there or what?
Yeah, that's what it was, right? We couldn't figure out how to park. Who was driving?
Yeah,
you were driving because we just told the story about you getting the ticket.
Yeah,
because
I'm the one that got the ticket.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where we're like lost because luckily we got there early enough.
Oh, wait, yeah, I was just about to say, don't forget to tell you, the practice started, I think, at 9, and we were there at like 6:10 thinking it was going to be sold out by 7:30, and we had to get there early because it's free, man. Everyone's going to be there. Not when you're coming off a 1-15 season and they're not going to be there.
It's the happening place in Davie on that day. And finally, I saw this guy running down the street. And you spoke up and you're like, hey, why don't you just stop? I'll let the window down. We'll ask that guy.
I was like, yeah, that guy's wearing Dolphin stuff. He's probably here waiting for you.
He's
walking down the street.
He's got to know what's going on.
Yeah, he's got to know what's going on. He's got Dolphin stuff on. He's got to know. We'll ask him.
And the next thing you know, I pulled off to the side of the road and, you know, you waved him over to the car and he come over there and
like no hesitation. Not like, are these some crazy old Dallas fan that wants to kill me for some bad O-line coaching or something? Or
it was ridiculous. And as soon as he opened his mouth and started talking to you, I was like, oh, my God. That really? And I remember we had what was his name? Freddie in the back seat.
Yeah, our friend Freddie, yeah.
Who was a Dallas fan.
Yeah, that's right. He was a huge Dallas fan. He was just tagging along.
Yes. And
so he recognized them before we did.
Absolutely. And Coach Sperano told us where to go park, and he actually, if I'm not mistaken, he sent us to the player's parking garage, the player and coach's parking garage.
Dude, I have no idea where he sent us. When he started talking, I remember. I think I actually spoke because he was on my side of the car because he pulled.
Yes.
He was on the passenger side. So he comes up. He's like 5 inches from me, kind of leaning. He's leaning in the window. He was doing, I guess, his morning walk he does. And I said to him, hi, yeah, could you tell me where? And then as here in the background, I hear Freddie say, that's coach. And I was like, could you tell me where the dolphin thing is? I sounded like a total idiot. The practice dolphin thing. I sounded like a total moron, dude.
That was great.
That was hilarious.
So, we finally found the parking garage he sent us to. And, of course, me being starstruck, you know, it was like, thanks, coach, as we went to drive off, like I'd known this guy all my life.
Thanks, coach. And he was laughing because we were like, oh, sprout out. We saw him laughing as we took off. It was pretty cool. He was pretty cool.
That's something that, that is a story that I will remember for the rest of my life and how stupid we must have sounded to him.
yeah. And then later on when we were getting autographs, he was doing autographs too, which I've never seen Philbin actually do that. But Sperano was doing autographs, and you said something to him. Thanks for the directions, coach. And he just looked up and kind of smiled at you.
That was it. But yeah, that was good times, man. That was good times. I remember that very, very well.
Well, it was good times for us, but not necessarily good times for our offense during the Sperano years.
That is for certain. Well, then again, you know, from the 20 to the 20, I mean, we were dynamic, but once we got to the 20, it kind of just fizzled.
I don't know. When Henny was our quarterback, I don't remember us ever being dynamic. I think I think you need to open up the dictionary. If dynamic means you suck really bad, then yes, we were very dynamic.
Well, wasn't Chad Henny your Deion Jordan? I'm kind of throwing it out there.
I don't believe I know what you're talking about, Keith.
All right, we'll save that for another show.
I was just excited we drafted a quarterback, man. All the way up in the second round. Could you believe it? I was just excited we had somebody to hope for. Then I was just hoping he would go away. So that was my biggest hope of all after a while. Just please go away.
Check down Chad.
I forgot. Check down Chad. I remember I made up a little song. Remember that little? I took the dolphin touchdown. I don't even get into it, but pretty much I changed the words for Chad Henne. We won't say it on the show.
No, we won't.
Yeah. Okay. All right, man. Well, last show was fun. Talked all about the defense. We pretty much stayed on point as much as fans can when they're sitting there talking about their team and. 1 minute you start talking about one player, and the next minute you're talking about John Offerdahl back in the day. Used to, you know. So we did pretty good. So now we're gonna do our best attempt to do the same thing with the offensive side of the ball, man. So I'm gonna let you pick which unit you want to talk about first. Do you want the choices, or do you know the different units?
I think I might be able to wing this one and tell you the different units. So. Let's start with we might as well start up front. Like we did the last show, we might as well start with the O-line.
Ooh, okay. I hate to start on a down note. No, let's do it. Let's get crazy. I'm going to start with the O-line. All right, man. Your thoughts on the O-line leading into 2015?
Well, do we have a bright spot on the O-line besides Pouncey?
Yeah, I think we got some potential. It's interesting, in my opinion, with our O-line. You could look at it multiple ways. You could name out the players of how it could play out. and say, excuse me, you could say, wow, that this line is going to really be good this year. Or you could pencil in different players at different spots, depending on who gets, you know, if Albert gets back from injury, if this rookie works out or not, if perhaps we do get lucky in Nab Collins from LSU, and, you know, just depending on how it is, and then say, oh man, this O-line's going to be real bad. So just right now, tell me what you think right now. No Collins, because he's not actually on the team, at least as the time we're recording this podcast. What do you think right now?
I don't want to say that we're in trouble with the O-line. I don't want to say that because I don't really feel that we are. The O-line wasn't terribly bad last year. It wasn't great by any stretch of the imagination. But it definitely wasn't anything like it was the year before. When poor Ryan Tannehill, I mean, well, we just won't even go into that. We'll actually go into that later with Ryan. But I'm actually having trouble figuring out who the starters are going to be. If we could actually project who the starter, no Pouncey, we know, guaranteed. Juwan James, we know that's guaranteed.
Well, are we going to assume Albert is back game one, or are we going to assume he's not?
I'm gonna assume he's back.
See, I think that's Shangri-La, because I personally think he's not going to be ready to start the season. But let's pretend we're in the perfect world. And it is. Albert is back. So then that means Albert's at the left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
The left guard is the biggest question mark. It's either Linkenbach,
mm-hmm.
the newly acquired player we signed, played for the Colts and whatnot, or it's Dallas Thomas, and I don't want to talk about it. Then obviously Pouncey. Right guard, likely Billy Turner. Which I'm more okay with that than Dallas Thomas.
I would be okay with it.
Billy Turner could be worse than Dallas Thomas, but at least as of right now, we at least have hope. We don't know that he is. He could be a beast.
Right, right.
And then right tackle would be Juwan James. Now,
right.
Where it gets sticky is if Albert doesn't come back and start at the beginning of the season. This is where it gets crazy. Because now you're going to take Juwan James and put him at right tackle, where he's pretty good. To left tackle, mm-hmm. where he's maybe so-so at best. I mean, he held his own.
I was going to say, mediocre at best.
Yeah. And then at right tackle, last year Billy Turner got some snaps at it, or you could try Jason Fox. And no matter what you do there, just about no matter what scenario, I mean, if you have Jason Fox, then you still have a shot at Dallas Thomas not starting in your O-line.
Isn't Jason Fox a free agent that we signed this year?
That was last year. It was last year. He got some play. But if he were to start, which he's a backup, man. I mean, unless something really happens this offseason, he's a backup. He'd be in a starting role. If not, you have Billy Turner at right tackle, which means at left guard, you know you have Dallas Thomas now. If you're and you have Linkenbach at right guard, and you still have Pouncey at center, so it deteriorates the interior of that line, especially. I mean, Albert not being out downgrades the left tackle, or I should say Albert being out would downgrade the left tackle, downgrade the right tackle, downgrade the left guard. Just by one player being out because of the way you have to shift it around. Because if Albert's not there, you can't just put Jason Fox at left tackle. He's just not good enough. You have to put the next best left tackle, which takes away your right tackle. That's the slippery slope of Albert being out, and that's what happened last year when he went out. That is where it all went downhill for us, is because we had to juggle it around. Dallas wasn't good enough, and remember, Billy Turner wasn't even playing.
Right, right.
He was hurt. We didn't even really play him till the last couple games. So what are your thoughts on it, man?
It's pretty much cut and dry. If Albert comes back, I personally think we're going to be set on our O-line. I think our O-line is going to be good enough to do what needs to be done, which means open up the run game, I believe. I believe they're going to be able to protect Ryan Tannehill. But you got to also remember, you know, when it comes to this offense is a quick, fast offense. that's what it's designed to be. If Albert comes back and he's healthy and he's ready to go, I mean, then it's a question of durability. How long is he going to last before he goes down again, if he goes down? But, I mean, I'm looking at some of these names that, you know, I personally, you know, took note of, and I'm not feeling warm and fuzzy about this offensive line. I'm just not. And it for instance, what you said, Billy Turner could be a beast. I mean, he could be an absolute machine. Awesome. That's great. Dallas Thomas?
I think the jury's out on Dallas Thomas. I think we know he's not a starter. And what scares me is all we heard this offseason, Dallas Thomas. Or I should say last offseason. Mm-hmm. That's what we heard leading into the season. And, man, that just didn't work out. Now we're hearing from the – and I'm saying that's from the coaches. We were hearing that from the coaches last offseason, all about how Dallas Thomas is going to be the man. Now we're hearing about Billy Turner. Kind of makes me nervous because I'm thinking, well, that's what you said about Dallas Thomas last year. I know they're two different players, but –
True.
I don't know, man. I'm not sure that what we did in the offseason and even in the draft, you know, we got one rookie, Douglas. I don't know that it fixed this line. I don't know that this line is any better than it was last year. Maybe a little. Maybe it has just more possibilities to be better. But right now on paper, without having some future knowledge, I don't see how it's any better.
And, I mean, I have to agree with you because – from what I can see just from the reports that I've read, it's obvious somebody's feeling a little comfortable with the options that we have on the offensive line, because even in the undrafted free agents, they're not even targeting a lot of O-line. I think there's like maybe one,
yeah,
maybe two.
Are they comfortable jumping on a plane with three players going to try and recruit Collins? Are we sure they're that comfortable, or they just run out of options?
But once again, that's one player, you know, that's one guy with a lot of questions, if you ask me, on the offensive line of what's going to happen. But it's all questions that can't be answered until things get going. I know there's one guy from, I think it's Arizona, that they were looking at. And, I mean, that's it. That's that guy from Arizona and then Collins from LSU. So it tells me that, okay, well, there may be one position that they're a little uncomfortable for. But I don't know. I mean, there's four solid starters. There's one position that's still up in the air of what's going to happen. And even those four solid starters, that has to do with Albert being healthy.
Yep, that's true. I mean, I'm nervous about this line right now. Now, if you did bring in Collins, and I'm trying to count it up here, if you did bring in Collins, I believe that gives us four first round. But I would consider it, because Collins was going to be a first rounder till it all went down.
Right.
So that would give us Albert, Pouncey, Collins, and James. Four of your five are all first rounders and a second rounder. I think Billy Turner was a second rounder last year. Maybe he was a third rounder. Now I can't remember. But that would give us four out of five first round picks on the line if Albert came back and we actually nabbed Collins. But beyond Albert, man, I mean, we got some young guys there. James, second year. Collins, first year. Billy Turner, first year. But you got Albert and Pouncey to help those guys.
True.
Bottom line is, I'm almost hoping by the time you as a fan are listening to this podcast that we have already grabbed Collins, if we're even allowed to. We discussed before that we really weren't sure what the NFL is going to let teams do and how deep into this investigation they're going to be before he's allowed to sign. So, but I don't have a lot to say about it. Just going to sum it up. I will be screaming if Dallas Thomas is anywhere near a starting position on week one. I'm going to be every week on this podcast yelling until they fix it. I mean, they're not going to fix it because I'm yelling, but I'm going to keep yelling until it just gets fixed. That's just not acceptable. Beyond that, any other scenario that maybe allows us not to at least start Dallas Thomas, I think we're going to be okay. I think if we go get Collins and he turns out to be a true first-round talent, I think we're going to be more than okay if Albert comes back from the injury.
We've talked about this several times before. It's the offensive line controls so much of the destiny of this offense. Some fans that don't really dig deep into the sport or whatever, or haven't played the sport or whatever the case may be, they don't understand, especially on the offensive side of the ball, playing, you know, football in high school, along with probably a lot of the other listeners probably played, you know, some football in high school or, you know, some kind of recreational football or maybe even college. The offensive line controls the development of the quarterback, the running back. All of your plays start there, because if your quarterback ain't getting blocks and he's laying on his back the whole time, he can't throw the football. Your running backs aren't going to get anywhere. They've got to at least be able to get to the second level, you know. And with this offensive line that I'm looking at, it has the potential of being, I'm going to say good, not great. It's got the potential of being good if Collins steps in and he's actually, you know, round one talent. And you've got, you know, Albert, and you've got, I mean, it could progressively become a very good offensive line. Possibly even great, but I mean, it's way up in the air right now to even really talk about the potential of that offensive line.
You know, I'll say it'll be the number one unit I'll be watching. You know, the linebackers maybe, but I say the number one unit of players I'm going to be watching this training camp, excuse me, will be the O-line. But I am going to go on a bit of a rant, and as I start to go on this, you're going to smile and you'll be like, oh God. Here we go again. I'm going to just say it one last time so I actually have it on radio, I guess officially in the record. You cannot at any time go take an offensive line that was the best in the NFL 2008 and wipe the whole thing clean but one guy and expect to recover from that anytime soon. In 2008, we had the best offensive line in the league, and let me see if I can remember this correctly. We had Jake Long, we had Justin Smiley, we had Jake Grove, we had Donald Thomas, not to be confused with Dallas Thomas, and we had Vernon Carey. Now, I understand that most or all of those players would probably not be on this line. That is not what I'm saying, but the point is they would have just gone naturally through attrition. Vernon Carey gets a little old and retires. Jake Long broke down after a little while, here and there. But no, they went in the next year and just decided for whatever reason the offensive line played good because Tony Sparano's our coach and not because they're a good offensive line and we're spending too much money on them, so we're going to wipe the whole thing clean. And the Donald Thomas one I still don't get because they weren't paying anything for that guy. He was like a $700,000 a year dude. Seriously, I never will understand that one. They got rid of Justin Smiley because he was overpaid. They got rid of Jake Grove because they felt like he never stayed healthy. And I think we were that same practice. Jake Grove got hurt in that practice, and I believe he was like cut the next day or something. And they got rid of Vernon Carey. They did it all at once, man. And ever since then, can you tell me a year we have not struggled on that O-line? And I understand it's not going to be the same players, but you can't build an O-line in a year. And look at all the picks we have put towards the line trying to fix it, and we still can't get it right. First round picks, second round picks, third round picks. Almost every single year we have drafted a guy in the first few rounds for that O-line, and we still can't get it right. And I believe it's because you went and you wiped it clean 100% at the same time, and you can't do that. And then in a way we almost got wiped clean again with Bullygate. We lost a bunch of guys with Bullygate too. Three guys went away really because of that. So we've wiped it clean twice now. We're struggling.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I agree with you 150%. You cannot take an entire O-line and dismantle it down to absolutely not even the frame. Not even the frame. You know, you completely dismantle that entire line, and instead of trying to, and I'm going to say reload the offensive line piece by piece, you're trying to go buy a whole new car. Mm-hmm. You can't do it. And we have struggled since then. We've struggled since 2008. Our offensive line has been hit or miss, mostly miss, and it's just, you know, a lot of times, and unfortunately, a lot of times you get players, the quarterback, the running back, where, well, they're just not panning out. Well, okay, let's look deeper. Why are they not panning out? You know, are they overcoached? Is it the fact that the quarterback can't throw the ball because he's running for his life after taking a three-step drop and he's got somebody in his face? You know, Dan Marino himself ain't going to be able to do anything with a three-step drop and he's got somebody in his face. Mm-hmm. You've got to give the quarterback some time. I mean, this just – and the O-line controls so much of that, the success of that offense. And after you dismantle it the way that the organization did, it makes me sit back and question, what are you doing? What are you thinking? I have no idea. You get paid all this money to make these decisions and me and you are sitting here doing a podcast and I'm in Tennessee and you're down in Florida and we both know that, what are you doing? That is just a straight bonehead move. And I'm just being honest.
Yeah. I mean, I think they've done things to try and, you know, fix it. I think they're headed in the right direction.
I
just don't think it's there yet. I mean, that's it. And one final thing I'll say on the O-line is right now they're sitting on officially, if you don't count any undrafted free agents, which aren't official as of this recording, they're at 12 O-linemen, and usually they go into camp with around 15 or so, if I'm not mistaken. So I still see that they'll probably be signing some guys. Now, they just cut, just as we came on, we looked and saw minutes ago, they cut a couple cornerbacks, just a couple guys we didn't even talk about, and a kicker. So they opened three more spots even, and they had 13, 14 spots still they could fill to get up to the 90.
True, and you're right, according to the list, they've got 12 right now. So, I mean, those three spots that they just cut could open up the three to make it to 15 for that O-line. So, I mean, it's, you got to let them do what they do and see what happens. But their batting average right now is not very high. They are making progress. I like where they're going with it. It's just, I think the first couple years after 2008, I think that they got to a point where they were trying to fix it right now, and you're not going to do it. There's just no way. There's no way you're going to do it with free agency or the draft. It's not going to happen.
Not overnight. Can't fix an O-line in 1 year. You could fix a receiving core in 1 year. If you had a bunch of bad receivers, between the draft and free agency, you can fix a receiving core in one offseason. There are some tight ends, you can fix that in one offseason. You can fix running back in one offseason. You get the right quarterback, you only need one, you can fix it in one offseason. One drafted player. You cannot fix O-line in one offseason, not even two offseasons, when it gets decimated. And twice now in the last 7 years, we have been decimated, and this is why it's a continuous struggle for us.
I agree completely.
All right, man, let's move on to the next unit. What are you thinking? We got tight end, receiver, running back. You know we're saving quarterback for last, so I ain't even going to mention that one.
You know what? Let's go with a running back.
Running, all right. Running back, man, what you think?
Well, I think, out of default, you know, of course, Miller is gonna be the starter. I'm not really sure how they're going to use him, because we did draft your boy from Boise State.
Yep.
Very high on. And if I'm not mistaken, we also got LaMichael James.
We have LaMichael James.
Kind of a bruising back. It's a big guy, you know. I mean, I think that...
Don't forget Damian Williams.
Absolutely. I love that guy.
And Mike Gillisley, who we drafted a few years ago, and he's just been kind of there. I don't even know why they're still continuing on with this, to be honest with you. Not that he's horrible. It's just he never plays. I don't know. Maybe he must play good enough special teams, just good enough to keep squeaking by the roster. Beyond that, I have no idea.
I'm trying to figure out... First of all, and I've said this before, I don't think Lamar Miller is an every down back. I just don't. I don't think he's a workhorse. I don't think that he can carry the ball as many times.
When you say he's not a workhorse, you mean he's not a guy you can give the ball 25 times a game to, not that he doesn't put in max effort.
Right. No. He puts in the max effort, and I mean, He's done everything that they've asked him to do. But I just don't think you can have him touch that ball 25, 30 times a game and be effective. That's my own personal opinion, not knocking the guy, because he is a lightning bolt. He's fast as anything. I mean, he reminds me kind of like a Reggie Bush.
Maybe a little bit. Yeah, I can see that.
Very quick. His lateral quickness is unreal. I mean, he can sidestep a tackle and be gone with no problem. I don't know. And I think that LaMichael James will be primarily our third down back.
I'll be honest with you. I don't really see LaMichael James much in the equation at all.
Really?
Yeah, that's my opinion. I see that unless something different happens, I could see Miller, Williams, Ajayi, and James as the fourth quarterback, and then Gillislee probably not even on the team at the end of this. I think Ajayi just kicked Gillislee out of the equation totally, and I think LaMichael James is the fourth running back. That's my personal opinion. I think it's going to be Miller and Ajayi, and that's going to be like a 1-2 combo this season.
I mean, and that may be, that very well may be the case. I don't know. You know how Coach Philbin isn't a big rookie starter.
He's better than Coyle, but yeah, there was the 1 year. I think it was Tannehill's second year. So, not last year, but the year before, we had the least amount of plays, not starts, but plays from rookies in the NFL. Now, the year before, Tannehill played, so obviously that number was skewed for that season just because of Tannehill. But last year, he threw some rookies in there. I mean, man, he gave a lot of responsibility to Jarvis Landry.
He did.
He was returning punts, he was returning kickoffs, and he was pretty much starting wide receiver at the slot position. And I mean, and even when he made mistakes, and we saw him make those kind of mistakes that rookie makes, and he dropped a ball or two, maybe we were hoping he didn't, and he definitely fumbled a ball or two, mishandled a snap or two on punt return or kickoff return duties that we didn't, and he stuck with him. In times where I thought, oh man, he's gonna sit him down. He did not sit Landry down. So I think he kind of changed his tune after the year before of just letting all his rookies just sitting on the bench, and they're not playing, they're not contributing, they're not learning.
And you know, the biggest thing with, you know, your boy that you're really high on.
I'm excited about him, man. I'm not gonna lie, I'm excited about him.
Is his durability? You know, I mean, you know, does he take one NFL shot on that knee and that's it? He's out for a few games, you know, because he's already coming in, to be honest, he's already coming in behind the eight ball because of that knee.
Yeah, that's the reason he dropped down. Because if you look at our draft, we really drafted three top 50 or top 60 guys.
I agree.
Parker and Ajayi. And if we added Collins to the mix, we, in essence, end up with four top 50, top 60 guys. And now try and tell me, Mel Kiper, we didn't have the best draft in the NFL, especially when you look at the guys we grabbed in the fifth round as well. You add that to the mix, I don't see how we didn't. If you have Collins, I count Collins. If you go out and get him, you did the best in the draft. Even though you didn't draft him, you did the best. But I agree with you that Ajayi, he dropped because of his knees. That's it. And he may be a one-and-done guy. 3-4 years, and that's it. And we talked about that a little last time. But what do you think about Damian Williams?
Now, that's the guy I love. I love his running style. I love his downhill, north to south, very physical. Even for a smaller back, he's a physical running back. Not overly fast, but fast enough. But I just like the way he's that running back where it's third down and three, and he has got to take on a defensive lineman at the line of scrimmage. He'll go toe-to-toe with him. and he'll do his best to drive past him, but he's very scrappy. He's a scrappy running back. He doesn't go down on the first hit, which I love. He continues to fight for yards, which, if I'm not mistaken, if I remember correctly, a couple times might have got him in trouble before because he would stay up and get hit and lose the ball and stuff like that. But I mean, I love that guy. I really do. I love his running style. I love everything about him. You know, how he just doesn't give up. I would love to see him in the lineup.
Yeah, I think he's going to be part of the equation. I think Ajayi's going to beat him out as far as depth position. I still think Miller's our official starter.
On
week one for sure, at least. Miller is pretty much pinned in, barring any health incidents, as the starter.
Let's be honest, Miller didn't do bad last year.
Nah, man, he had a good season, and his entire career he's been one of the league leaders in yards per carry. I mean, he's no slouch. I know we've spent a lot of time talking about the guys under him, but I mean, he's definitely no slouch. But I more agree with you. You can't keep him 25 carries a game. That's just not going to work for him. You're going to keep him around the 12 to 15 mark and mix in one of these other guys, either your boy Williams or my boy. And I think it's going to be one of those scenarios, but I think LaMichael James stays on the team. Gillislee probably goes. Because I just don't see what he really contributes to this team anymore.
I could see that, because I agree with you completely on that, because you hardly see him on the field unless it is special teams. But it's, you know, I would love to see him run a double back set with either Williams or your boy and Miller, just to see what can happen with those guys coming out of the backfield for Tannehill to hit, and see how any of them do catch him, because the running back, Ajayi.
I know how to say it like five times in a row, and then all of a sudden I forget again. It is a strange name.
Yeah.
Jay Ajayi.
He has got excellent hands. He does. Excellent catcher out of the backfield.
He's like Ricky Williams, man. He's a bruiser.
Yes.
He run people over. He enjoys the contact. And on top of it, he can come out of the backfield and catch the ball, man. Yeah, could you see us, not that they would do that in this offense, but wouldn't it be fun to go back to the Wildcat days and do it with Miller and Ajayi?
Ooh.
Those Wildcat days, they were fun, man. Let's admit, it was a, I don't know what you ever want to call it. It was a scheme, you know, it was a temporary thing. It was never going to be a permanent forever, a novelty play, if you will. And one thing I always said about this, and I never heard an analyst say it, I never heard one person ever say this, this is just my own observation, and I even got to watch some of those games live. What actually made the Wildcat work the best, when it was clicking the best, was not when they took the quarterback and put him out as a wide receiver. Yeah, when we first ran it and it faked everybody out, it worked. But when you were running it to perfection, when everyone knew you were going to do it and you were still running it to perfection, was when you took Chad Henne, sorry, but put him on the sideline and you ran it with Ricky and Ronnie, but you had Patrick Cobb as the, see what that did was with the Patrick Cobb, if anybody remembers him, was us, like a special teams third string running back for us. And you put him back in there as the additional blocker. And what it did is it almost threw the numbers off. You had to put at least two to three guys out in the secondary as a defense. You had to. So if you have two wide receivers run out, you're going to have to at least have a cornerback in each and a safety to protect. So now what you always had was a numbers game every single time. And when they ran it that way, they ran it to perfection. What happened is he got hurt in that Monday night's Jet game. And I think it was 2009, if I'm not mistaken, if I have the year correct, because I was actually at that game. He got hurt in that game, and he never came back for the season. And then they stopped running it that way. They started running it with taking the quarterback, and he would be the second wide receiver. And I don't know why. I just wanted to, like, call the coach, say, hey, coach, are you watching the film? Did you see it works better this way? You can't find another guy to replace Patrick Cobb. Maybe they just didn't have another guy that could team up with him. But that's the way it worked the best. But I don't see us taking Tannehill and put him on the sideline, and I'm sure we'll never run the Wildcat again, at least no time in the near future, but it's fun to pretend. It's fun to think about. That New England game was a lot of fun, man. That was
yes, it was.
When we first unveiled that, what, third game of the season in 2008, man, oh man, that was just so great. That was the best, like the best day of my life at that moment, especially when we thought we were going to get destroyed. You know, playing the Patriots in New England, coming from that 1-15 season in 07, they were, you know, 18-1 or whatever it was.
But the funny thing is I just have to put this, plant this seed in your mind before we move on to the next one, and that is, imagine running that Wildcat now, considering Tannehill used to be a receiver.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I don't. They wouldn't put him in the line of fire.
They wouldn't
like
do
that.
But just imagine him running a route.
Yeah, that's true. I never even thought about that. I didn't even put that in my head. That's interesting. So you run it. Yeah, but the thing was, Ronnie could throw the ball. You think? I mean, I don't know if Ajayi can throw the ball. He's a soccer guy, but he probably throws like we throw. I doubt he throws very, very good, because I've seen soccer guys try and throw, man. And
throw the football overhand like this.
Exactly. And I don't know if Miller could throw the ball, so I don't know that it would work the way it would work with Ronnie, because he could throw the ball.
Yes, he could.
Yeah,
Anthony Fasano learned that.
Oh, yeah, because that was that same Jets game, too, man, where I think it was the first play of the game. They, if I'm not mistaken, or one of the first plays, they ran it, and they whooshed Fasano. They just hit Fasano right now. Oh, that was so awesome. God, that was so much fun. Anyway, okay, so we'll move off from running backs now, man. Let's just hit tight end. What do you think?
Okay, sounds good to me.
Actually, right now as we speak, we only have six tight ends. We have six tight ends on the roster, and I don't envision us adding much more. Maybe one more. I don't know how many tight ends they usually. I don't remember how many tight ends they normally go into training camp. I don't know if it's 6 to 8 range somewhere, but we got Jordan Cameron, obviously. I mean, he's the starter, assuming he's – we have to say this by so many players. Assuming he's not injured, assuming there's not a problem, he's pretty much pinned in as the starting tight end. I was having dreams, though, when we got Cameron and the Bills hadn't yanked Clay away from us yet. I was envisioning running two tight end sets with Clay and Cameron. I don't want to dwell on it because it's done. It's not happening, but that would have been awesome. But Sims is no slouch, man. He's gotten a lot better, and Sims can block. That's what I like about him.
I like Sims. I like Sims a lot. And you know, we're already assuming that, you know, Cameron is going to be the starter. And when we signed him from Cleveland, I was extremely excited about that because of what he did in Cleveland. And he's a big target. He's a physical tight end. But you're right, Sims. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Sims was the one that caught the one-handed touchdown against Atlanta
a couple of years ago when he was a rookie. Yeah, the over his shoulder, yes. One hand, that was awesome. Being held.
Yes, being held. And I mean, he hasn't really been, you know, in the offensive production all that much because, you know, of Clay. But I mean, I'm excited about Jordan and, you know, even Sims. I think Sims might see an expanded role in the offense. I really do.
I think for sure. I mean, he's your hard and fast second tight end. He's a third year guy. I know the coaches trust him. Dan Campbell, who's the tight ends coach, is known as a good tight end, a good positional coach. He's probably, now that Casey Rogers is gone, the best positional coach on our team. I think he's done a good job with him. I'm interested to see what Arthur Lynch does, because, you know, we drafted him last year and then he got hurt. So I'm curious to see where he goes with that. But beyond those guys, the rest of the names on the list are just some guys. I mean, I just looks to me they're not looking at running a lot of two tight end and not much.
No.
Because if you truly wanted to be a two tight end team, you need four. I mean, you need four guys. I mean, look at the way we have it ready to rotate guys in on the defensive line, especially in the middle. We have so many defensive tackles on this team. It's crazy. We have like 7 defensive tackles or 8 defensive tackles. And I'm not even talking the ends, tackles on this team. So that shows you what kind of scheme they're looking to do there. And then the opposite end is you look at tight end and you're thinking they're going to have one tight end on there and 3 wide receivers. Or maybe
absolutely
one tight end and 2 backs and you know, so, something to that effect. But I don't see them running a ton of 2 tight end. I've heard that the offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor, likes to do it. I just don't see the roster working for that. I understand you think, well, you got Cameron and Sims. Yeah, but that's thin. If that's what you're relying on, one guy's gone, and then what are you going to do? Your whole offensive scheme goes away? You just don't have the players right now to run that scheme. You're going to run mostly one tight end.
I mean, I could see that. Now, I did, of course, then again, that's, you know, it's the rumor mill. I had heard because Marcellus Bennett from Chicago was wanting a trade, and he obviously wanted an extended contract with whatever team took him in that trade, and I had heard rumor that Miami was contemplating, not going after him, but they were contemplating, they were looking at Bennett. I don't know how true that is.
Was this before or after Cameron was signed? Or before or after we lost Clay?
This was after.
And after we lost Clay?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So, I hadn't even actually heard that. That's very interesting.
If that's the case, then, I mean, I have no trouble with Bennett at all. I mean, I had him on my fantasy football team. So it's it's one of those things where, you know, I love the guy. I mean, he's consistent. He's a workhorse. Big target, which is, you know, something that is going to help Tannehill out. I mean, I don't know how true it is. I haven't heard anything about it since, which tells me that it wasn't very big on the priority scale.
Here's where I'll say I think that there's no way that happens, because we know we've seen issues and heard of issues, and we don't follow the Bears, obviously, closely, or Dallas, the team he was with before, Bennett, meaning. We know that he's a bit of a troublemaker. He's not really a locker room guy. Wasn't there an incident at the beginning of last year that got him pushed off the team in the offseason? Maybe it was last year, the year before. This, not off the team permanently, but sent away for some days, for a week, because he
it was with punched, Brandon Marshall.
Didn't
too.
He punch somebody or some? I don't remember. Well, whatever. Everybody wants to fight Brandon Marshall, I guess. But I don't see that guy being a Philbin guy, because Philbin, man, I mean, we haven't really gotten into the Philbin conversation yet, and that's really not for this episode. Philbin doesn't do conflict. Philbin doesn't do problem. He doesn't have those skills to handle those kind of players, which is unfortunate, because some players are absolute troublemakers and just need to not be in the NFL or get their act straight if they want to stay in the NFL. Some people are kind of on the line. I mean, these guys are 20-something years old, 21, 22, 23-year-old guys. A lot of them have had nothing. You hand them, I mean, at minimum, if they're an undrafted free agent, they're getting a three-year, you know, pretty much $1.5 million total deal, not per season. So you handle a 21, 22, 23-year-old guy, $1.5 million. They come from, some of them come from bad homes, and they don't know how to handle it. They've got egos. They play football. They've got egos. Coach has got egos. You've got some guys that are just kind of on the line. They just need a little help, a little coaching, a little something that I don't know that Philbin has the skills. Like, if anybody's ever heard the expression, let me put it to you this way. You're in management, right?
Yes.
I'm in management. If we went to our upper management and we said, you know, this guy you've given me, it's just not working for me. Okay, that'd be all right, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, if we went to upper management and went, these eight guys here I got, these guys ain't working for me. Well, man, you only got 10 guys. What you want me to do? Maybe that's more you than it is the guys. I'm just saying, we've heard a lot of issues, and I'm going to bring it back to the offense here in just a second, but just to finish my point, we've heard a lot of issues of Philbin not liking players, not getting along with players, and wanting to ship them out. I've never heard or seen anything. It's like an epidemic in my life, or players leave and they're like, man, I didn't like Philbin. Audric was a smart, hardworking guy. He left and was like, yeah, me and Philbin just didn't click. I'm like, how is that possible? I don't understand that. I don't know what he's looking for or what he wants, but he needs to get better at that if he's going to be a truly successful head coach. It's part of the job. I mean, the X's and O's are important, and the analysis is important, and picking the right players are important, and the structure of how you coach your coaches and all that is very important. But being able to relate with your players on some level, some way, and work through some basic minor behavioral issues is something you've got to do as a head coach. And I've never seen Philbin really be able to do it. Now, I'm not behind the scenes. I don't work for the team. Maybe I don't know what the heck I'm talking about, but
I really don't see it.
I agree with you completely, because the title head coach does not necessarily get you respect.
No, it doesn't. Not from these players. Maybe when they first step off the plane and onto the field and they are a rookie and they're a fifth, sixth round pick, they're undrafted, and they are just rah, rah, ree, I'm going to do what the coaches say. But after a little while, they start listening to the veteran players. They hear them complaining about the scheme. They hear them complaining about this. I mean, let's put it to you this way. When Chad Johnson, and I will say, I did not like Chad Johnson. I did not like that signing. And I said at the minute we got him, I don't want that punk on our team. I didn't like him and I didn't want him. And it didn't work out, obviously. But when he left, I think it was Reggie Bush, Carlos Dansby, Jake Long, and I think it was Javon Best went into the room to Todd and Philbin. And we only know this because of Hard Knocks. We wouldn't have known it otherwise. And then by the next year, three of those guys were not even on the team anymore. I mean, all they went was just a simple conversation. Say, hey, if something's going on, let us know. I mean, he didn't like that. Carlos Dansby shot his mouth off a little bit on the radio. Jeff Ireland was listening at the time. Again, we only know because of Hard Knocks. He's gone. Right. It's just, there's got to be a point where you got to be able to handle some of these situations a little better. But we're gonna go away from Philbin now. We'll do a Philbin show maybe here in the future and just talk about him. Anything else you want to say on the tight end?
No, I mean only time will tell. You know, I think that obviously Cameron's going to be the starter. I think Sims going to see an expanded role in the offense. Like I said before, to what extent I don't know. But I would really like to see Sims get more of a shot, because I think he deserves it, in my opinion. I think he deserves it with the play that he has had in the past. So
let's envision this situation. With no Cameron, let's say he got hurt, concussion or something, Sims is our starter. Are you okay with that? Because, I mean, that happened a lot last year. Charles Clay played through injury the entire time. Charles Clay got hurt last year in what I like to call the spring game, the college version of the spring game, which was the scrimmage over at Sun Life. He got that knee injury. He was not right the rest of the year. And there was many games where Sims was starting or playing a significant role, and it didn't really seem to shine, honestly.
I mean, it didn't, but I would be as comfortable with that as I could be with that situation. Obviously, you want Cameron in there because the experience, he's a beast, great hands, good blocker. Yeah,
when he's playing 16 games healthy, he's a Pro Bowler.
Absolutely, no doubt. But Sims, I mean, we could do worse.
Oh, no, for sure. I don't dislike Sims. I was actually just kind of disappointed. I thought I'd see more from him last year. I know that they say, again, I don't have the intimate experience, they say tight end is one of the more difficult positions to learn in the NFL. Absolutely. It takes a lot of time to learn. There's a lot of intricacies of that role that aren't in some other positions. All right, man, so let's move on to wide receiver. So last year, we mentioned this briefly in the last podcast, we were the number one team to get to the red zone, meaning the number one red zone team as in we had the most trips. We weren't even close to the best scoring team, though, which means obviously when we got in the red zone, we struggled. What we had were guys that could move the ball. What we didn't have were guys that could get us touchdowns. So, and we talked about the two things that cost us the playoffs. We couldn't score in the red zone, and we couldn't stop the run. And they set out without a shadow of a doubt in free agency. And in the first two rounds of the draft, they were determined to make picks, to make acquisitions, to fix those two issues. I feel like they fixed it on the D-line. Going to ask you, do you feel like they fixed the red zone scoring issue with this group of wide receivers?
I'm going to say yes. And the reason I'm going to say yes is my personal opinion is the signing of Jennings – huge for that wide receiver core. Absolutely monumental for a couple reasons. Number one, to score in the red zone, you need crisp route runners. The reason is because the field's shortened. You don't have a lot of room, and you need someone who is going to cut that route off when it's designed to be cut off. That's just the way it is. We know that Tannehill doesn't really have any problem with accuracy when it comes to throwing a short ball. So you need a receiver that is actually going to cut that 10-yard square in off, or that 10-yard, it's going to be crisp, it's going to be on point. Jennings is that guy. Jennings can do that.
How many balls do you see Jennings catching this year?
I don't think he's going to catch a ton. I would say...
I've got a number written down. Let's see how close you are to my number.
Oof. I'm going to go 70.
Oh, wow. I wrote 50.
Really?
Yeah, I wrote 2 to 3 balls a game. I see him as the third wide receiver on this team, and I don't see that as a bad or negative thing at all. I just don't see him as our primary receiver. I think Parker and Landry's and Stills are probably over them. I mean, Greg Jennings is the third, so maybe not Parker because he's a rookie. But by the end of the season, maybe Jennings is the fourth wide receiver. I can't complain. If Greg Jennings is my fourth wide receiver on my team, last year he was in Minnesota, he was their first wide receiver.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I know that – you know what? I'm going to save that. I'm going to save that for Tannehill. I think this is the most comfort that Tannehill has had since he's been at Miami.
Now, I got a little something to tell you that was kind of interesting. You know that some of the wide receivers were not Tannehill fans in that locker room last year. Mike Wallace, yep, obviously being one of them, Gibson being one of them. They were not Tannehill fans. And we hear stuff like this all the time. So I want to preface what I'm about to say by it isn't groundbreaking, earth-shattering information what I'm giving you here, but I did hear a story about how Tannehill did a big fishing trip, and he was out in a boat and hanging with like Landry and Stills and all these guys. They were just chilling and just went out and had fun. Now I don't know if it was a hey, let's get to know each other trip, or if it was something they really wanted to do because they like each other. And I understand that liking each other or not liking each other is not the end-all and be-all to how you perform on the field. If you're good, you're good. If you're not, you're not. But having wide receivers that believe in you is probably more important for Tannehill than it may be for like an elite quarterback, which we know right now Tannehill is not elite. He may be very good. He may be even top 10 this season, but he's not elite. So no. I just thought it was an interesting little story or information. I don't even remember where I heard it. I think I probably heard it on the radio.
Well, this is another thing that I'm gonna go out on a limb here a little bit. You know, you're talking about this, you know, this fishing trip. They're having a good time. They're having fun. The quarterback obviously is probably the most important position on the football field. You're the field general. You're the leader.
It is.
You know.
Yeah, I'd say it has to be. It is. It's also a make or break you as what the team, what kind of success you'll have as a team many times.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times, and me and you have discussed this in length like crazy, a lot of times the quarterback gets blamed for everything that goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But yet also takes all the credit when everything goes right.
Yep.
And I'm gonna use Mike Wallace for an example. Now, the Steeler fans, as soon as we picked him up, they were like, you guys overpaid for him. You know,
we did overpay for him, but it was the price that it was the market price, and actually Minnesota Absolutely. Had offered him more.
Absolutely. He's not a team player, he's all about self, blah 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 blah. We don't know if in that locker room, you know, him and Tannehill would go at it, and the reason he didn't like Tannehill is because Tannehill didn't look his way more. You know, but at the same time, how many times did Mike Wallace give up on a route?
I don't know that he gave up on a route as much as what annoyed me. Look, Tannehill doesn't hit the deep ball very well. We're just going to say that. What drove me crazy about Wallace, it's not that he gave up on routes. It's not that he didn't try or whatnot, except when he kind of sat down in the last game of the season or whatever the story was there. And he was open 2 to 4 times a game by 2, 3, 4, 5 yards, and he caught 2 deep balls. What drove me crazy is that he refused to try and adjust for the ball. Like, not even, he would never go up for the ball. He would never try and compete for the ball. If it wasn't hit in this one little, you know, like half dime size spot in his hands, he wasn't catching it. And that's what drove me nuts about him. But he was fast and he was open and we should have hit him more. I don't know, and I've never heard, I've actually heard the opposite, that he was not a bad locker room guy. Like, the people in the locker room liked him. I think the part of the reason he's gone is he wasn't a fit for Tannehill's game, and he didn't like Tannehill. It's not a personal thing. He just didn't like the quarterback, I should say. Not necessarily Ryan Tannehill. He just didn't like the quarterback. He didn't like the way the position was being played. It was getting on his nerves. It was aggravating him. So, you know, he's gone, man. I mean, it's it. There is no more Wallace. We got these guys now. Landry, Parker, Stills, Jennings, Matthews. That's who we're riding with, and I still say it's maybe beyond defensive tackle. I don't know if we have a better unit on our team.
And I agree completely. I think that wide receiver core is, you know, and like I said, I've got my opinion about Tannehill with that core. If he progressively gets better, like he has done each year, he's slowly, progressively gotten better. With that wide receiver core, this is the year that he could really have a blowout year. He really could. Now, of course, it goes back to the offensive line, but with that core, with Jennings and the experience and the wisdom and the tutelage he can bring to those younger guys.
And they had to have that because Landry, second year, Parker, rookie, Stills, third year, I think Matthews, third year. I mean, that there's no way.
You've got to have somebody in there with knowledge and wisdom about the NFL, the way things work, and what they can do. Now, are the younger guys going to be open to listening to what Jennings has to say? Well, I hope so.
Well, that's why he's there, and they will be, I think. And the good thing for the team is that Jennings is a Philbin guy, and Philbin is a Jennings guy, and that all works. They're trying to get the chemistry right too. They're not just looking at, like, Ireland would go after talent. He would go after players. He never had a clue about chemistry. And I think Tannenbaum and Hickey have a more of a clue about chemistry and how one player fits with another player, how certain receivers fit with certain quarterbacks. Ireland just didn't get that. He just looked at players, oh, look how talented he is. Look how fast he is. Look how strong he is. I want to go get that guy. I think if you remember on Hard Knocks, we had that tight end. He didn't make the team. Les Brown, I think that was his name. And I remember Ireland specifically said, well, if you go out on the street and try and find a guy as tall and big and fast as he is, you won't find him. So can he play football, dude? No, he couldn't. He couldn't. Dude, me and you could have been out there as good. He wasn't an NFL player. I'm not trying to pick on the guy. He seemed nice. I felt bad when he didn't make the team. He was obviously very upset, and I was rooting for him to make the team. But it was obvious that he just wasn't an NFL talent. And Ireland did that all the time. He either brought NFL players in that didn't match. Deion Jordan's another one. He had all the physical attribute, but was he really a football player? Or was he a football player? Did he fit your team? Did he fit your scheme? Did he fit your chemistry? I mean, we could go through the list. We can have a whole show about the players that Ireland got that were good players, maybe, or they were talented guys, or they were athletes, but they weren't a fit for the team, weren't a fit for the chemistry, weren't a fit for Philbin. I mean, you name it. He never seemed to take that into consideration, or at least many times he didn't. And it's why so many of his picks or his free agent acquisitions just busted out, did work for us.
I will have to agree. You know, just because you're an athlete don't mean you can play football. There's been some of the, you know, and we'll talk about receivers, some of the best receivers in the history of this game weren't necessarily the most athletic, but they were football players.
Yes.
Steve Largent. He wasn't athletic. He was a football player.
Yes, and I
Tom
think
Tom Waddle for Chicago, same difference. You know, so it doesn't matter how athletic you are. You have to have a football mind, a football IQ, and be able to play the game of football. Anybody can be fast. Anybody can be fast. You know, so it's one of those things where I think that, you know, with this receiver core, I'm excited. This is one of the groups that I'm very excited about to see what happens.
Me too, man. Me too.
And I think it's going to be I think it's going to be productive. I really do. You know, that red zone drought that we've been in, I don't think that's going to be an issue this year. I really don't.
If it's not, and if the D-line really is fixed and that's fixed, I mean, unless all of a sudden now we end up, and you never know how the new season's going to take. That's what always starts. The season starts and you think you know what units are going to be bad, what units are going to be good, and half the time it ends up the opposite. You think this guy's going to be good, he's horrible. You think this guy's going to be bad, he's awesome. You never know until the games actually start, but I believe you're right. All right, so quarterback. We're going to tease quarterback a little bit. We know Tannehill's the starter, but we're not going to get into a 30-45 minute conversation about Tannehill on this episode. We're going to do that in a future episode. And anything else you want to say, man, about the offense before we wrap it up, Keith?
No, I mean, that's about all I have to say. I'm excited to see what the offense does with the weapons we got, and see what kind of chemistry, perfect word to use, what kind of chemistry that offense has. I'm looking at it on paper. I can see this offense putting up 25, 30 points a game. I could.
Yeah, we need at least 25. That's like the minimum end. We need at least 25. All right, man. Well, I am Ron. This was Keith. You've been listening to Unsquish the Fish. If you'd like to email with questions, comments, or actually get in onto the show, you can email me at unsquishthefish@yahoo.com or gmail.com. Also, you could like my Facebook page, Unsquish the Fish, or catch me on Twitter @UnsquishTheFish. All right, thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a great day.